Hi, I'm Jamin Brazil, and you're listening to the Happy Market Research Podcast. My guest today is Edwin Wong, Senior Vice President of Market Research at BuzzFeed. Founded in 2006 by the likes of Kenneth Lehrer, Chairman of the Huffington Post, BuzzFeed is a digital news and entertainment company. Originally known for online quizzes, listicles, and pop culture articles, the company has grown into a global media and technology company, providing coverage on a variety of topics, including politics, DIY, animals, and business. Prior to joining BuzzFeed, Edwin has guided market research strategy at Yahoo, Pinterest, and Vio. Edwin, thank you very much for joining us today.
How's it going?
Edwin, after graduating from Panoma in 1998, how did you find yourself at Hall & Partners?
This is an awesome question. When I look at that number 1998, I think we were just joking. I feel so old. But I remember when I got out of school, I was going to go and get my PhD in industrial organizational psychology. And at the time, there were two really great programs, whether it was Nebraska or Illinois. And my then girlfriend, who's been my wife for about 20 years now, she said, if you decide to go, you're going to go by yourself. And so I chose love instead of a profession. And it worked out great. I started off the first 6 to 9 months of my graduated time from Pomona selling Glenn Plaid shirts from J. Crew and being a legal assistant at the LA Athletic Club. And what was so great is, you know, in the middle of it, one of my friends decided, hey, you maybe want to apply what you learned in psychology, the study of human behavior, and apply it to business. There's something called market research you should look into. And I kind of fell into this small company called Hall & Partners at the time. I was one of the first of 5 employees out in LA. And, you know, I joke all the time that we literally, you know, went from loading soda, answering the phones, stocking the copy paper, and then, you know, all within the same hour, closing our very first global copy test deal that was multi-million dollars for one of the most respected tech companies in the world. And so, you know, it was such an amazing journey to find myself and such a great opportunity to work with some of the coolest people in market research.
It was a really disruptive time in 1998. I remember, you know, I did my first online survey in 96, and then Jamie Plunkett and myself started Decipher in 2000, you know, Hall & Partners being one of our very first marquee accounts, right? I mean, it was a super interesting time because we saw this migration of data collection that moved from mall intercepts and phone to online and then later mobile. And it was very interesting to me how Hall & Partners, you know, was a pivotal part of that transition. I think the value that you were offering in those days was originally, I think, mixed mode, but then you moved most of that data collection to online, correct?
Yeah, I think what was so great is just like we've known each other for so long, and Decipher was one of my favorite clients, favorite partners, I should say, because of what you guys actually did for us. And, you know, we were one thing that, you know, I always remember is how future forward that was. And, you know, we were thinking about online and who does online? We need, you know, that phone caddy. Yeah. The funny thing is how quickly that transition happened over, it felt like 5 to 6 years. You know, everything transitioned over. And, you know, what's been really awesome in the space is the transformation that we're even seeing now. And now we've got all these interesting survey platforms. And the cool thing about Decipher is you guys really did start it all. And I still remember spending many late nights hanging out with Braden and asking him to help me with that self-serve crosstab tool and doing some interesting filters. It was such a fun moment with lots of late nights, and it was such a great partnership.
Yeah, it was. And the CEOs that you've had at Hall & Partners, Chris Hubble and others, who have even been working closely with presidential candidates over the years, they did a profoundly good job of helping companies identify brand affinity and help punch through the noise in the marketplace. So you moved from Hall & Partners and then later to Yahoo for about a decade, right?
I definitely was at Yahoo for quite a bit of time. I actually started in 2004. Around that time, working in their search division out in Pasadena. And it was such an awesome time because, you know, I think back then, most people who understood search thought of it as a last click attribution type media, which it is. I think it does that quite well. But there's so much upper funnel activity. There's so much of, you know, I think even just this year, Google Trends or Think with Google launched a personal microsite because they saw such an increase in how-to searches. And so we're literally outsourcing our critical thinking to Google with our how-to searches. And so really kind of crystallizing that story for marketers and helping them understand consumer behavior was my first run there. And, you know, just being anywhere over a decade, I had the opportunity to work with the media properties, work with folks that run video. Near the end, I had such a great time building out the B2B insight space. I worked with the likes of Dave Utica, Sebastian Fernandez, Ashmeet Ali, Trisha Hoff, and we really had such a good time just kind of blowing out thought leadership there and talking about new trends. In fact, I think one of my most fun accomplishments was working really closely with some key leaders to talk about the Maven strategy that we had around mobile, video, and social, all around what Lauren Weinberg actually wanted to do there. And so, you know, we really looked at the space differently. And one thing I think I learned most about Yahoo was that things change so quickly for the consumer. And as a researcher, if you don't change along with them or observe those changes, you really do fall behind.
Yeah, that's a great point. Was there any material differences between how Yahoo and Pinterest used research? In other words, did one use qualitative more or tracking studies more?
Yeah, I think one interesting thing is just going to Silicon Valley. Pinterest was just a great place. Their use of data was just so strong. If you take a look at what the platform actually means, it's full of intent signals. Your future planning, and you're aspiring and you're being inspired into doing things that really cause you to act. And so one thing I actually felt was quite different was really me, not necessarily Yahoo, going there and being a smaller, more agile place. I had the opportunity to really get deep into analytics as well. And so really thinking about consumption behavior and real analytics in terms of like what is the consumer doing on this platform, and making life, breathing life, I should say, really telling that story was what was different for me. And so I had a great time working with some of the groups there and running those groups and really kind of bringing that story to life for Pinterest.
What were the key differences between what you were looking for from partners or vendors, right? So in Pinterest, were you more interested in tools to empower your current team to do research, or was it more, you know, full service, answer these business questions for me, market research company?
What was so great is I think Yahoo's infrastructure for market research in general had been already built out. And so going there was less needing to prove the importance of it versus when you get to some of these newer companies, they're just starting out and their analytics core is fabulous. And, you know, gaining an understanding of what the consumer is doing is actually quite easy because you've got some of the smartest data scientists and programmers that would literally be able to help you pull any data from the grid that you need. When you start to go to those places, it's really saying there's something kind of different when you talk about the why and what qualitative ultimately brings and even what survey actually can do for a business. And so building that part of it out was the most fun for me because you started to combine activity and analytics and really look at why a consumer was doing what they were doing, what they were saying about that behavior and how they actually wanted to change. And I think that actually created a really powerful narrative for Pinterest. And frankly, I think we started to do that at the tail end, even at Yahoo, as I was able to work more and more with other teams as well.
Yeah, Pinterest is such a great company. They've filled a need that I didn't even know existed, right? So Google or Amazon is where you go when you know what you want, whereas Pinterest is where you go when you don't know what you want, right? It's very much driven on this discovery mindset from a consumer or user perspective. And it is interesting how you leverage more of the qualitative, it sounds like, in that sort of consumer discovery phase.
Yeah, there was this one study that I actually did where we created this construct about access. And if you think about some of the newer platforms, Facebook is the access to connection, whereas Google really is the access to knowledge. And we consider Twitter the access to some sort of currency or relevance because, you know, influencers are there. And we really talked about Pinterest as the access to ideas. You know, and even at BuzzFeed, one of the things that we're starting to see is this access to humanity and identity. As we start to look at some of these newer platforms, the reason why I think they're taking off is, you know, distribution's there and the mobile device makes it easier, but we're starting to align some of those experiences to what's core to being human. We're looking for these digital experiences to actually impact us in real life. And so, you know, as we start to do this work, if you can sort of size down and say, what does this experience actually even mean? You start to understand that human behavior, and it gets really interesting, and you start having a lot of fun dissecting what each experience means to the consumer.
So if you can, what would be the key three or the primary three lessons that you learned through your career, whether it's at Yahoo, Holland Partners, et cetera, that then you applied to your work at BuzzFeed?
Yeah, I mean, it's what's funny, it's like not even at BuzzFeed, but just like for research in general, I think that for me, what I've learned most is that, you know, numbers, they matter less than the story. Oftentimes, as practitioners, we spend a lot of time in methodology, which is absolutely critical. But the stories that we tell each other are the stories that will move us to move in business. And, you know, every time you take a speaking class, the first thing that the speaking instructor tells you is, what's the WIFM? What's in it for me? In order for people to literally listen to our numbers and to our stories, we always have to apply the WIFM for them. Otherwise, there's no movement in our work, which is why I think a lot of us do what we do. And I think the last thing that I've learned along the way is that as a researcher, we're hardly ever the smartest person in the room.
Right.
We just better be the best listeners. And that's basically what I've learned. It's you're in constant questioning mode. Like, why is this? And what drives you? And I think that's actually the most important thing that I've actually learned in my career.
That's really interesting. Social media has completely revolutionized where the consumer attention is. 6-ish hours is what I've heard that a large portion of our population is spending on social media a day. You know, especially in the context of outside of maybe sporting events, you're not really seeing any cable consumption among younger consumers. Having said that, we do see there's a lot of spend. In fact, the majority of spend for advertisers is still in the traditional channels. Are you seeing changes? Is BuzzFeed seeing changes in terms of spend among large brands and how they're treating social media? And is that something that's going to shake out in the future?
Yeah, I actually think that what's interesting is that regardless of time spent, the most important thing that we know most advertisers are looking for continues to be reach, scale, and frequency. You know, they've broken it down on that end. I think as we start to see more time spent on social media, what's interesting is like even when you look at the formats of which we're spending time on, they still sort of ladder back to the same kind of experiences that are traditional. You know, online video, as an example, I think there was a really interesting article that just came out this week that talked about YouTube's growth even this last 6 months in and of itself being an interesting social platform as well. And so, you know, I do see, having been in this space for 20 years, the growth of search, display, programmatic, and even in the last like 5 to 10 years, the ramp up of social spend and interest in BuzzFeed, as the cohorts, I think, start to age out and we start to see millennials aging up and even the next post-millennial generation getting into their early 20s, I can definitely see the marketing shift and marketing spend actually shift along with it, just because I think it's going to be natural that marketers are going to want to be where the attention is for sure.
So we see it. We know that there's been a massive, alongside the digital consumption, a massive increase of digital, you know, passive or behavioral data that you as a marketing researcher are exposed to. Are you turning to outside solutions to interpret and create a more comprehensive consumer persona, or are you building out using tools internally in order to do that?
I think it's a mix of both. And, you know, one of the things that Jonah Peretti, our founder, he said to me once in a meeting, he's like, I find that we're data full, not data rich.
And interesting.
I loved that quote, and, you know, I'll never take it because that's definitely his. And he's not even a researcher. He's a CEO. He's a founder of all things. I really love that because I find that one thing is, as we get to all these new rich sources, are we leveraging them in the right way? So that we're building the right sorts of tools and even algorithms to actually be meaningful. You know, if you think about algorithms, they're if-and statements that use historical data to actually become a thing. And so really thinking about what those statements are in the first place and the underlying data, I think, is incredibly important. What's the story it's supposed to tell? And so, you know, we do a mixture of both. I think continuing to work with really rich partners in this space that will help us, I think, is important. But then teaching folks internally to not fear data, you know, part of their diet, I think is really great. We do that pretty well with our data science team at BuzzFeed right now. Gilad Latan leads that effort, and his team does a phenomenal job just really bringing to life what data ultimately means to BuzzFeed and what it means to even our group and how we leverage it to tell stories as well.
You know, with the trend in social media increasing, now Amazon released over 40 million, a news blip, over 40 million Alexa units have been distributed, which is a meaningful part of, you know, U.S. households now. You know, voice continues to disrupt us. In fact, part of my morning routine is this. Alexa, give me my morning briefing.
Here's your flash briefing from BuzzFeed News. Hey, I'm Alex Laughlin, and here's one.
Alexa, stop.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, and it's so, you know, this has been, so my whole household literally hears that in the morning, right? And it isn't that I'm going to my mobile device or my desktop or whatever, I'm just consuming that content, and it even follows me through the Alexa app into my car. So, you know, how is BuzzFeed seeing this trend to a voice world?
Well, I think what's interesting is if you take a look at over the last, you know, 5 years or so, there's really this whole concept of digital going analog. And, you know, even as I was working my way from Pinterest to BuzzFeed, this whole notion of digital to physical, you know, this whole concept of inspiration to ideas to action was something that we were starting to see built out. IoT and even what voice is, it's really tech for the senses. You know, we literally started off by looking for technology platforms to help us when it comes to our cerebral and, you know, eye consumption, the eye part of it, and even the touch part. And if you think about it, auditory was really the next thing. And, you know, as I start to look at what voice actually does, one of the things that actually stopped, you know, older consumers from actually leveraging digital was it's a little bit difficult to use. What I think is awesome about voice is it is the simplification of the extraction of information through Q&A. I ask Alexa for her to answer something, and she literally can do it from questions. And so I think what this ultimately does is it further democratizes our ability to connect with knowledge. And if you think about what the Alexa apps can do, or even Siri, or even what Google's doing, they are literally changing the game of what's going to be possible next with voice. And I think just the Q&A piece is first, and there's tons more opportunity.
Oh, I totally agree. My whole being is saying this is bigger than mobile. Like this transition that we're going through it's revolutionary, right? Because I can consume and interact, I can interact and then consume with information in a passive medium, which I just simply haven't been able to do so far, right? So it's really exciting.
I was going to continue to riff and say, if you really think about the consumer side, it's not even just knowledge extraction. It's going to change the way we shop when we run out of toilet paper. You know, it's the other day, my kids, they found the question and answer app, the story app, so that Alexa now tells them stories. And, you know, it's going to change marketing because, you know, we were fighting the first, you know, the golden triangle and the first three positions in search. But the future of voice apps on the marketing side, the platforms are doing fulfillment when I run out of paper towels. Who's it going to be that I get the paper towel from? And who wins out? Is it the private label app that Amazon set up, or is it Bounty? And so I think there's plenty of questions that, you know, open up as we start to see this expansion and evolution of what voice actually even means.
I know, it's funny. You think when I do my employee onboarding right now, we have two slides. One is illustrating the consumer journey with purchasing paper towels through Amazon. And it's really interesting because you have lots of opportunities to be intercepted. Now it's, you know, where's the opportunity for intercept in a voice economy, right? And so it gets down to, if I'm a brand, the thing that I care the most about is becoming the Kleenex of that brand. My consumer has to love me so much that they're willing to say me by name when they do the purchase. And it's just it just changes everything. You know, how brands react to that, I think, is a big question that I'm sure they're asking.
Yeah, I think what's going to be the next wave for researchers to figure out is it consumer journey market research that we're actually looking at, or is it friction? You know, how do you remove friction? And there's going to be whole businesses that are just built on removing friction. And really, that's going to be the big value prop for many market researchers to kind of think through and talk about. Because if you don't understand the why and you don't understand the friction points, to your point, you're not going to be the Kleenex of that brand for sure.
Yeah, well said. So when you're assessing new market research companies to do business with, what are some of the key characteristics or offerings that you're looking for nowadays?
I mean, what's great is I look at really smart minds that think, it sounds so cliche, but that think outside of the box, or that think one step ahead of the consumer, but more importantly, that identify the reasons why consumers do what they do to literally one sentence, right? You know, we're kind of in a place right now where we have all of this data, but the key insight is still just, you know, one sentence from all of that data. And so like working with people that can distill that down and really kind of create things that make you go, whoa, that's so true, I think is really what I look for. And I think that all begins with, like, even when we were working together back mm-hmm. in the day, Holland Partners and Decipher, great partnerships. We were joking about this earlier. There's no such thing as vendor, client, whatever. It's really right. Partnerships, because you want to learn and work together and build together. And I think that's that when you find someone like that, you kind of build this really awesome rapport that can actually lead you to really great answers that you have questions for.
Yeah, so you're hitting on a couple of points. So what I want to really hone in on is you've got to be, as a supplier, you have got to be there for your customers no matter what. I mean, I reflect on, there was one project on Holland Partners and it didn't go great. It was in field, it was a tough sample and the provider fell out. And so we were literally on conference calls over Christmas Eve and then on Christmas Day getting this stuff dialed in. And, you know, there's this whole value chain, I think, that's created there, right? Because it wasn't just us on the phone, but it was also our suppliers on the phone making this a, you know, and getting it to you guys so your customers were satisfied on the post-holiday insights. So, yeah, you've got to have those. When they don't answer the phone, it's a big problem.
Yeah, and I think that's where the partnership comes in, which is there's no such thing in my mind still as, like, supply versus client. One of the things it's like any great relationship, you give and you get what you give. And so oftentimes, I think one of the things that has been really fun to do is treat each other really, really well so that you would want to get on the phone
right
before the holidays, because you could have easily said, I'm out until January 1st, which you guys were awesome to never do.
Right. And see, that point is so key. I teach an MBA course, and one of my narratives is on LinkedIn, how important it is to connect with your peers and even those people that are, you know, just starting their careers, because those are the people that are going to be an influence over the next decade or two. And right. And so you just it's vital that you treat them like that. And that also you put yourself in the seat of the people that you're serving, whether it's your boss or, you know, a customer, because that will inform your personal brand over time. Right.
And then I think it's even more important when you're on the quote unquote client side, how you're treating your partners, because
yep.
What's so great about this industry is it's so small, and in one flip, it could be reversed very easily.
I have a dear friend who will remain nameless, but he wasn't particularly kind to his vendors. And unfortunately, due to some layoffs, he found himself out of a job. And he actually said, I really wish I would have been nicer to my vendors. Anyway, so last question. You know, our listeners are insights professionals. As BuzzFeed, what is the one thing you want them to know about?
I think BuzzFeed has been creating content that connects at a human level for over a decade now. And there's an accessibility to it that makes it so worthwhile to study. When you take a look at the success of some of our brands, you know, Tasty, which is our food brand. Almost every single person on Facebook has probably seen a Tasty video, which is the over-the-head camera shot of hands making something. You know, people ask us often, you know, how is it that you have the largest food channel on Facebook? How is it that you have engaged over 500 million users? And how is it that people are coming back to this? And, you know, I think that the reason is when you take a look at the actual desire of what we wanted, we went where the consumer was at. I think that was the first thing. And we really didn't look at, you know, controlling that brand on our owned and operated site. We went where the distribution was and where the consumer behavior was. And I think the most important part was the way we actually think about content is through the lens of accessibility. When we think about that brand, people liked it because it was not just accessible, but inspiring, and it helped them discover something. That was actually, you know, drawn up through consumer behavior studies where we really looked at what the brand meant. And I think that's what we're looking for today as consumers. We're looking for brands to be next to us. You know, we're not just looking for aspiration, but that accessibility to a brand not making us feel bad that we don't know how to boil an egg or boil water for, you know. And so there's something to that that we've really connected on. And I'm proud to actually be here, because when you take a look at that whole concept of accessibility, our diverse talent, our connection, and the way we actually think about news, it's really all within what we actually stand for. And so it's been a really fun thing to think about the human condition and to think about what the brand means and how to build better experiences. And that's why I'm really proud to actually be here.
My guest today has been Edwin Wong, Senior Vice President of Market Research at BuzzFeed. Edwin, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks so much.
Thanks so much for tuning into today's interview with BuzzFeed's one and only Edwin Wong. Had a great time. I hope you enjoy this postmortem discussion with my team, including Jamie Plunkett, myself, and Alexandra. Also, our YouTube channel has some behind the scenes of the discussion guide creation and some further conversations. So we hope you will find a lot of value in this, and then please feel free to share it, interact with us on social. Have a great rest of your day.
What I really want to hone in on here is where market research can add value to BuzzFeed. We struggle with this as market research companies because we always say, you know, we're going to be by your side, but we don't have a informed, like, how do you articulate that? And I think that's where you, because it's like proof. You know what I mean, Jamie?
The industry's always struggled with wanting to have a seat at the table.
Right, and then how we wind up, you know, communicating the soft skills, like we're going to be there beside you, is really important. I think that's, you know, where market research companies coming into a BuzzFeed or wherever saying, hey, listen, we'll work with you on Christmas. We'll fly out and open your presents for you. Whatever, right? I mean, they
care
about
find
that.
Value add. It's no longer the mechanics of running research or being that sage on the hill.
That's right. Totally.
And then, gosh, what you're saying on voice is like almost what you have said to us. Word for word.
I mean, it's the voice is transcending the current user our product acquisition, right? So it's voice is literally changing everything.
Yeah,
the consumer journey is completely changed.
And I think what Kate's analysis on how the tech was working was really, really interesting. I thought about this a lot, the development of like the computer, because of course when you first got the first computer, as you were talking about with your Apple II in our interview, it's like you practically had to know how to program to interface with it. And then of course as the development of the OS is more and more user-friendly and we understand what a non-programmer user needs, well, it distances them from what they can do to a certain extent, but it also makes it so much more accessible in terms of the masses who are accessing it. And the same thing is said about voice. It's like the reason why the internet has been hard to translate for people who are a generation above us. Even my parents still have trouble. Like, how do you not know how to like put the words together into a Google search to search effectively, but they just don't, you know, have that fluency. And voice being that point of intersection that makes it so much more easy to access the internet. You know, one step removed, you don't even have to be like computer fluent. You just have to be fluent in your native language to say, hey, Alexa, who was, you know, the Academy Award winner of XYZ here?
I don't know that.
Alexa, stop.
Well, certainly it's not. I think right now there is a bit of a barrier. jobs because you have to know the specific words to call up and the skills to call, etc. But once interfacing with a personal assistant, visual personal assistant, is leveraging language that you're more comfortable with, then I think that's when we start getting a critical mass in adoption.
Yeah, that's
all the tech guys will figure that out.
Well, and this is where there's a big opportunity for brands, is because, like, your narrative around my parents don't know how to, right? Well, my kids don't know how to search as well as I do. And yeah. I mean, they just don't. I can find things usually faster because I just know I need to type in how to or whatever, right? And that's where I think we get to inform voice, or brands rather get to help inform voice. You think about this, like your Clorox spending money on ads, right? They should be spending money on ads to teach people how to buy on an Alexa.
Yeah.
See what I'm saying? Like, it's the words that they use to do the transaction. Because now, because what does not exist is a script for how to interact with Alexa. It just doesn't exist.
Google did this recently with, I don't know if you've seen the commercial of Kevin Durant. That it's like literally the crux of the commercial is just repetitively repeated, like saying the, like, hey Google. And Kevin Durant, I'm making a joke, is like, yo Google. And it's not working. And then finally the programmer says, well, maybe we'll go back there and change all the code so we can get yo Google to work.
TV advertisements used to have the Facebook badge and your Twitter handle. They don't need to do that anymore.
Right.
It's been like 5 years since that has appeared at the closing slide of your TV ad. One, people aren't watching TV ads, and two, people know how to find you on Twitter since then.
Yeah.
So this is the new way of doing that.
Exactly. The brand, it's critical the brands inform the consumer on what that journey looks like.
Yeah.
Right? And the faster they meet in front of it, the more profitable they will be in business in the next 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a wrap. Loved the time today with Edwin. Thank you very much, sir, and look forward to what BuzzFeed is doing. Market researchers, feel free to reach out to me through our social channels. Love to continue the dialogue. Have a great rest of your day.